All right. Pat, this is something we do once a year, and it is really a lot of fun. We have a doctor on from Stanford, and we're lucky again to have, I think it was on me last year, Dr. Mark Safran, Associate Chief of Sports Medicine and Fellowship Director of Sports Medicine, Professor of Orthopedic Surgery at Stanford, specializes in sports medicine and arthroscopic and ligament reconstructive surgery on the knee, shoulder, elbow, as well as the hip. Dr. Safran, nice to have you with us again.
Hey, Doc.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, you were with me last year, were you not?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, I know. We love the segment. Well, I was going to let you do the Stanford Health Report today, because everyone on the list has got something you can cure.
I hope, but it's not good to have them on the list.
No, it's not. But Patrick is with me here. We're out at the public house. Yep. We're glad to have you with us. And what I love to do with you, and it's so enlightening, is just to give backgrounds on these types of injuries, what the rehab is like, and what people can expect coming back. And I think one of the injuries this year, obliques. What is an oblique? How does it get injured? And why does it take so long to come back from it?
Well, so the obliques are one of the sets of the abdominal muscles. And when those get strained, like any muscle injury, it takes some time to get it to heal and some rest. And it's very hard to rest your abdominal muscles, because whenever you do, rolling over in bed, getting up, you have to use the abdominal muscles to function, to get you up and around and to keep you upright. So it's very hard to rest those muscles, and you need them to really function at top notch to get your trunk rotation when you're throwing or when you're hitting. So they tend to be a really aggravating injury, just like even a muscle hamstring injury. If you pull it, it's easy to pull again, unless you give it some time to rest and recover. And when with the abdominal muscle injuries, it's very hard to get those to really rest fully and recover and try to figure out what is the right time to get them back.
Dr. Safran, speaking of abdominal injuries, I had a hernia surgery in early August, and we often hear the term sports hernias, but that my doctor didn't give me that label of having a sports hernia. To be honest, I was just excited to find out I had an abdominal wall. So I'll ask you, what's the difference between a sports hernia and a hernia?
Well, so that's an interesting topic. The term sports hernia is pretty much a misnomer. It's not really a hernia. A hernia is an outpouching, and so usually there's a weakening in the abdominal wall, and some of the actually intestinal contents can even come through that abdominal wall defect or hole or weakening. And so what they're trying to do in that situation is to tighten up the abdominal wall to keep the things that are inside your abdomen and not poking through. A sports hernia is a misnomer in that there is really no poking through. There's no abdominal wall defect that is occurring. It's really more of a core muscle injury. And so that term has gone through an evolution. Back in the late 80s when it was first described, it was called Gilmore's groin or hockey gut, because you see it a lot in hockey players. And as we're learning more and more about it, we see it more and more frequently in athletes of all other sports, including soccer, football, and certainly baseball. And it seems to be a core muscle injury where the muscles of the lower abdomen and the upper thigh attached to the pelvis. And so doing a standard hernia repair doesn't usually work on trying to resolve that problem.
Okay. Well, are you going to make an appointment?
I'm all cured, but should it happen again?
Okay, all right. You're calling Dr. Safran.
I'll call Dr. Safran and get down to Stanford.
All right, very good, Doc. You handled that well. Hamstrings. I remember talking to you about this, and I always said, look, 21 days is what I think a hamstring takes. Now you strain a hamstring, you pull a hamstring, a mild hamstring. I don't care what they call it. Does it still take about 3 weeks to cure it? And what is the new treatment now for taking care of a pulled muscle like that?
Well, so hamstrings are very commonly injured, and certainly the biggest issue is that they're very commonly re-injured by getting back too quickly. But there's a lot of research that's come out in the last 5 or 10 years where we can actually pretty reliably predict how long somebody will be out based on the severity of the hamstring injury itself. And so usually it's a microscopic tearing of some of the muscles, usually a way where the muscle becomes tendon. And, you know, the average one might take 3 weeks, so some minor ones can take less than a week, and more severe ones can sometimes take 6 weeks or longer to fully recover and get an athlete back where they're not as likely to re-injure it.
We've seen an awful lot of concussions, and people always ask me, Is it a new sports injury? You think this has been going on for years? Now we just deal with it and we're more attuned to it?
We're much more attuned to it. There's certainly a lot more publicity about it, but I think we're also better about diagnosing it. Back in the day, you probably in football would have called it getting your bell rung or something like that, and now we call those concussions, and they are minor, not to discount the significance of it, those are some minor traumatic brain injuries, though, and so they are now in the realm of concussion, and certainly there's a lot of interest in it because of the potential long-term effects that may occur as a result of these concussions. And so there's a renewed interest and obviously now even legislation regarding the management of individuals with concussion-type injuries.
Hey, Doc, someone tweeted in and wanted to know the long-term effects of cortisone shots for athletes. And rather than try and solve the issue, just kind of numb them up so they can continue to play. And your thoughts on how that might affect an athlete long term?
Well, cortisone got a bad reputation because in the 70s and 80s, athletes would get injections with cortisone and numbing medicine to get back and play on a regular basis. And I think it got a bad reputation because of it. I think a single cortisone or two or even up to three cortisone injections in the same location in a 1 year period of time may not actually be that harmful. It's more than that when we start to worry about it. Cortisone's not really a numbing medicine. It just reduces the inflammation. And because of the inflammation, that can be a source of the pain. So having an athlete with a cortisone injection, one or two, to get them to play may not be such a bad thing. I certainly don't recommend it as a treatment in the sense of there's usually a reason there's inflammation and you want to treat and address the underlying cause. And we're very reluctant to give cortisone type of injections for young athletes in the teens and to get back to sports. I think you want to address the underlying cause before getting them back. But the professional athlete, they do sometimes get cortisone injections, and at the same time trying to do the rehabilitation and address the underlying cause while still trying to play through it.
Doc, I think Dr. Mark Safran is with us from Stanford. Always a pleasure to talk with you about some of these sports things. Is it more predictable? I think maybe we touched on this last year. Are injuries now more predictable? From the training that athletes go through, the way they run, is there some way where we can say, boy, this guy is prone to that kind of injury?
Slowly but surely, we're getting to that point. We're not all the way there, but there are some things that we have identified that might put somebody at risk for certain injuries, but there's much more work that needs to be done in trying to prevent more and more injuries. But we are certainly seeing different injury patterns and with some of the interventions able to reduce some of those.
Did any come to mind that are maybe somewhat on the list of, hey, if we look for this, maybe it is somewhat predictable, the type of injury?
Yeah, well, hamstring injuries and adductor or inner thigh muscle injuries are oftentimes related to muscle imbalance between the muscles that would oppose it. So having good hamstring flexibility and looking at your quad muscle strength versus your hamstring strength, so that you may need to strengthen the hamstring to help reduce the risk of injury to the hamstring. Same thing with the inner thigh muscles that we see against flexibility and strength seeming to be associated with that. I think some people were identifying limited hip rotation as a potential for problems in the hip, so we try to avoid deep squatting as part of their weight training program to help reduce the risk of hip injuries in some athletes as well, using proper mechanics and as well as a way to reduce injuries.
Boy, great.
Hey, you know, it's funny that Marty sprang that up. I'm glad Marty did because there's a website, sportsinjurypredictor.com, where you type in players' names from the NFL, and it'll give you a percentage on their likelihood of getting injured. For example, I just typed in Colin Kaepernick, and he's a low risk at 12% likelihood of being injured, and they only charge you $3.99 a month for the use of this website, Doc.
Terrific.
I'm not kidding, by the way.
It can make a website for anything. Really?
I mean, 12%. Seriously?
Really?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think we're at that level yet as sophistication of being able to really sort that one out.
No, but we certainly can charge $3.99 a month. We figured that out. Okay? how to do that. You segued beautifully into the hip area.
Serious.
Because we see pitchers with hip injuries, the torque of the labrum and the tearing. What is the treatment and what is the likelihood of a pitcher having that sort of injury coming back to full strength?
Well, we are seeing hip injuries more and more commonly in baseball players than we had in the past, but I think we're identifying it more frequently in all different sports. It used to be the chronic hip flexor strain that didn't get better that now we're looking at is actually probably not the hip flexor, but it was probably the joint itself. And the numbers of pro ball players that have been having this diagnosed and treated is going up significantly. When you look early in 2002 to 2006, there were only 8 major leaguers that had their hips treated for labral tears surgically. But from 2007 to 2011, it was up to 33.
Wow.
And just this year, you know, there's 3 or 4 guys that have gone down with the same issue where they require surgery for it. The labrum in the hip is a cartilage ring, like an O-ring that goes around the edge of the socket that kind of helps keep the ball in place and helps in the functioning of the joint. And it can get torn oftentimes because of the extremes of motion the athletes are going through. And particularly, I think that we see that the ball of the hip joint, it gets a little bit out of round. And that seems to be associated with doing sporting activities while you're growing. And mm-hmm. It may be early specialization of sports with certain athletes that might be part of the problem. You know, baseball being a unilateral arm dominant sport that you're always throwing from the same side, you're always having the same rotations might be why that's occurring. And generally the labrum doesn't heal on its own and only addressing the labrum and not the underlying cause seems to not do as well as getting the athlete back as having to take care of the underlying bony issue, which is why a lot of the guys, when they have the surgery, it takes 4 to 6 months to get them back playing at the professional or collegiate level, at the high level. So we are seeing it very frequently, but the athletes are able to get back to their same level of play greater than 90% of the time.
Boy, interesting. Boy, always a pleasure to talk with you. The Cal Bears were winning. That is one of your schools, is it not?
Uh-oh.
I did do my undergrad at Cal, and yes, I am working at Stanford, so it's an interesting time.
I understand. And you got Duke in there, too. I guess you probably studied pretty hard.
Just a bit.
Yeah, and then I don't want to overlook UCLA. You had that in there, too.
True.
All right, very good. Look, we always learn something from you.
Yeah, Doc.
And I appreciate you coming on every year with us, and I appreciate it, and have a good day. Thanks, Doc.
Thanks, Doc.
Thanks for the invitation. Take care. Have a good day.
All right, that's Dr. Mark Safran from. Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah, I feel like I'm a little bit more wise.
Well, I feel a lot better about the hip injury.
Yeah.
You know, it is curable.
Yep.
4 to 6 months. And then if you deal with the bone a little bit, mm-hmm. which probably, if I understood him, caused perhaps the tearing of the labrum.
Right.
If you get the bone in a better position, then maybe the labrum doesn't tear again. Maybe you do get back.
Well, Chris Linscombe on the morning show the other day said he thinks Tim is definitely fired up to come back in 2016.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.